Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
With the United States no longer party to the JCPOA with Iran, I'm speaking with Tristan Volpe, Assistant Professor of Defense Analysis at the Naval Postgraduate School, about the impacts of that decision. The views he expresses here are his own and do not reflect those of the Department of Defense or the U.S. government. Welcome to the Warcast, Tristan.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So now that we've had a number of weeks since that decision was made, have we seen any change in Iran's nuclear program?
So the short answer is no from a macro perspective, but we have seen some important announcements, especially last week on Tuesday. There was a statement that Iran was going to start a new centrifuge assembly center at Natanz and potentially resume some of its activities within the boundaries of the JCPOA. But just kind of backing up from that announcement, I think it's useful to kind of maybe put Iran's nuclear program in context, if you will. I know you had Jeffrey Lewis come on a few weeks ago to discuss some of the more technical details surrounding Iran's nuclear program. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So I think it's useful to understand why Iran is actually in a pretty strong position right now, with the U.S. having withdrawn from the JCPOA. So I'm sure a number of your listeners will remember Iran's nuclear kind of odyssey from 2006 up until the conclusion of the JCPOA in 2015. So during that time, Iran mastered enrichment. Enrichment, of course, is one of the key pathways to being able to produce the fissile material that goes into nuclear weapon. Iran also had put investments into the second route to the bomb. That's the plutonium pathway with its Bashir reactor. Just to kind of make a long story short, the JCPOA that was concluded after 2 years of negotiations in the summer of 2015 essentially closed the plutonium route. Iran, you know, really shut down and poured concrete into the core of its nuclear reactor at Bushehr and put some what we refer to as physical constraints over its enrichment activities. Iran shipped out most of its stock of enriched uranium and agreed to not enrich up to 20%. And to keep its enrichment activities at 5%, the LEU level, down to a level that was agreed upon under the terms of the deal. So that's kind of condensing down over a decade of kind of Iran's nuclear program just into a few short points. So what's happened with Iran's program recently is that, of course, President Trump announced that the U.S. was going to withdraw from the JCPOA in early May. A few weeks later, we heard a statement from Secretary of State Pompeo kind of trying to articulate a bit more what U.S. objectives were vis-a-vis Iran. We can talk about that in a few moments. And of course, we now have the Iranian reaction. And so their reaction has been, in my assessment, they've been quite smart and measured about how they're responding to the U.S. decision. I think ideally what the U.S. wants is for Iran to overreact, start to resume its enrichment activities and to start taking demonstrable or overt steps towards a nuclear capability that would really cause concern and in particular would cause the Europeans, the EU3, France, Britain, Germany, to turn against Iran. So I can explain why that is in a sec. But just to answer your question, Iran hasn't done anything major yet, but I think they're putting themselves in a pretty prime position to ratchet up this threat of reconstitution going forward.
Well, let's turn to the U.S. and its position. President Trump has long said when he was candidate Trump and even before that, that it was a bad deal. We can try and figure out what exactly he meant by that. But the at least the public intent is to negotiate a better deal. Could you go into some detail about what the U.S.'s bargaining position actually is? I mean, you've talked a little bit about what you think the ultimate objectives are. Just delve into that a bit, and speak to is there a possibility of renegotiating this, or are all of the other parties they don't want to deal with it?
Yeah, so let me lay out what I think the U.S. is doing now, and I'm going to say this is what I think based on the we don't have a ton of information in the open source about what U.S. strategy is, and the statement that we saw from Secretary Pompeo to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on May 24th is the most detailed position, along with his Heritage Foundation speech, that kind of lays out how the administration is thinking about U.S. withdrawal from the Iran deal. So between Pompeo's remarks in public and the president's remarks when he announced the withdrawal, that's kind of what we're working from in terms of the U.S. action. So starting with kind of President Trump's statement, his causal driver for leaving the Iran deal was that he was concerned about the so-called sunset clause within the JCPOA. This is something that even proponents of the Iran deal acknowledge was a major issue. The sunset clause, so Iran agreed to limit a number of its enrichment activities under the JCPOA. Now, some of those, especially those that pertain to enrichment, were set to expire in 10 to 15 years. And so this put Iran in a position that by 2030, Iran would be able to resume and scale up its enrichment activities, so long as they were for peaceful purposes and under international safeguards monitored by the International Atomic Energy Agency. So that has always been a concern amongst both opponents and proponents of the JCPOA, is that if Iran played it cool and got to 2030, they could essentially really increase their capability to produce fissile material. And there wasn't going to be a whole lot that the international community could do, because this was essentially a major aspect of the deal, which was, this was a pathway to normalize Iran's enrichment program. So President Trump said that was his major concern. He was worried about Iran being able to reconstitute his program. So instead of keeping the Iran deal in place and maybe trying to deal with this big issue, and there was ongoing negotiations. You remember Macron trying to kind of negotiate, over this coming to the White House. The president just decided to withdraw. So essentially, these sunset clause issues, instead of being an issue in 2030, are now kind of more of an immediate issue. The second aspect that the U.S. Was concerned about was Iran's regional behavior. And this kind of goes beyond the four corners of the JCPOA, which obviously did not deal with Iran's presence and its proxy forces throughout the region. The third issue is that, as you just mentioned, the U.S. and Trump wanted to negotiate a bigger agreement that would include not only the nuclear program with the sunset clause issue part of it, but the regional behavior, Iran's ballistic missile program, and its foreign policy behavior in a more general sense. And so the hope here is that by pulling out of the JCPOA and starting to reapply pressure on Iran, and we can talk about what that means, this would force them to come back to the table and accede to the 12 huge demands that Pompeo announced at the Heritage Foundation. So that's kind of the nutshell of what the U.S. is doing. So the reason I think the fundamental crux of the issue, why this actually puts Iran in a good position for the short term, is that for the U.S. to really punish and put pressure on Iran, they need the Europeans, and they also need, to some degree, the Russians and the Chinese. And it's become pretty clear that the Europeans in particular are not willing to play ball. And so I mentioned that Iran was in a prime position to threaten to reconstitute, and that's kind of what we saw them threatening to do last Tuesday when they mentioned that, hey, our manufacturing workshop, we're going to restart it potentially at Natanz. What they're trying to do, what Tehran is trying to do vis-a-vis Brussels, is have the Europeans essentially throw up kind of a Heisman block, if you will, against the U.S. request for the Europeans to apply sanctions on Iran. And so why that's so crucial is that a number of, this is pretty obvious to everyone who kind of follows this issue, but Iran doesn't want to engage in trade with the United States. We still, even if we stayed within the JCPOA, we have a number of sanctions over other issues, human rights, terrorism, etc. The Iranians really want to trade with the Europeans. The French, for example, have a joint car factory in Iran. So the issue here is that Iran, by having the U.S. walk away from the U.S. from the nuclear deal, the Iranians can essentially threaten to begin resuming enrichment, conditional on European behavior. They'll say, "Hey, look, Brussels, EU3, you guys resist this request from the Americans to apply sanctions, and we will remain within the JCPOA." And the Iranians have been very clear about this, and they've basically said this explicitly. And so just last week, we also saw signs that the Europeans are following this strategy. There was a letter last Monday from the EU3 asking for a waiver from the United States in terms of their corporations being waived from sanctions. So that's kind of where we are in terms of what the U.S. is doing. Iran's reaction, and in particular, Iran trying to peel away the Europeans from this American strategy.
Well, let's move to more regional dimensions of all of this. Now, you have an article coming out with Nicholas Miller in the Washington Quarterly soon on the effect of Iran's nuclear program on Saudi Arabia's nuclear ambitions. Could you explain that process for us, please?
Sure. So, one reason why pulling out of the JCPOA last month was a bit suboptimal in its timing is that the United States, according to the press, has been in ongoing negotiations with Saudi Arabia since last fall into the winter over a nuclear cooperation agreement. This is what's referred to as a 123 agreement. And this is kind of the legal foundation to be able to share civil nuclear technology, such as a Westinghouse-style reactor between the U.S. And Saudi Arabia. And so the regional effects of Iran's nuclear program and the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA need to be kind of viewed in this lens of how Saudi Arabia is preparing itself to essentially hedge against Iran's nuclear capability. So what we're starting to see and is essentially there's always been these fears of an arms race in the Middle East. And in particular, Israeli leaders, American leaders, and others have always said that one of the key reasons for trying to constrain Iran's nuclear ambitions is that they don't want to see a so-called chain reaction, or what my co-author Nicholas Miller and some of his work refers to as kind of these nuclear dominoes falling. And so the U.S., not just in the Middle East recently, but for a long time, has taken a number of efforts to kind of break these chains and to prevent these nuclear dominoes from falling. But what we're starting to see in the Middle East is an arms race, not over kind of atomic weapons, but really this underlying technical capacity to be able to produce the fissile material that goes into a nuclear weapon on short notice. So in the kind of jargon of political science and security studies, we would refer to that as nuclear latency. And so we're really starting to see this latent nuclear arms race in the Middle East unfold. And so prior to the U.S. decision to pull out of the JCPOA, the Saudis were pretty explicit in some interviews in their calculus that the JCPOA essentially bought them a decade to prepare. And this kind of goes back to the comments I made initially about the sunset clauses. They said, okay, under the terms of this deal, Iran is not going to be able to reconstitute its program beyond a certain level until 2030. Well, that gives us in the kingdom until 2030 to get our our own nuclear program in order. And to be very clear, you know, prior to the JCPOA, Saudi Arabia had virtually no capacity to develop a civil nuclear energy program. And so, you know, there was always concerns that they might move in that direction, but there wasn't any sort of concrete indicators that they were actually going to back up a lot of their rhetoric and tough talk about matching Iran's capability with actual capability themselves. So the JCPOA essentially bought them a decade to prepare. And what it seems is likely to probably happen is that by pulling out of the JCPOA, this kind of accelerates that countdown clock because the Saudis have to anticipate that if this kind of stratagem that the Iranians are pursuing vis-a-vis the Europeans falls through and collapses, and there's a number of analysts who think that at some point the Europeans, you know, especially for multinational corporations, the Europeans may say, hey, look, we're not going to be willing to risk sanctions to, you know, establish a foothold in Iran. And, you know, the JCPOA may collapse within the next 6 months to a year. If that happens, then the Iranians are likely to probably consider reconstituting their program to a certain degree. And that puts Saudi Arabia, obviously, in a pretty tough position.